Have one bill on our agenda. We have to move right to the orientation to House Bill 2270. We call forward the appropriate staff person, Elizabeth Martin Mahar, who in the briefest terms will give us orientation to this wonderful bill. Yes.
Oh, no. Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, with House Bill 2278, this is your historic property bill. And what I've done is given you a section by section outline, and I'll just try to highlight a few of those that are the major changes from a revenue standpoint and some of the other administrative major changes for this program. So basically, when you're to begin with, most of the sections in the beginning, 1 through 3, are just really kind of putting some definitional changes in the bill. And section 4 really begins by changing a bit the application period and things for participants. It's increasing the application fee to participate in the historic property program from 1/5 of 1% to 1/3 of 1% of the real market value of the property. In section 5, it's giving the authority for approving and denying applications to the State Historic Preservation Officer, not the review committee. And that's another change that's kind of consistently changed throughout the bill. In section 7 is the section dealing with the extension of the sunset of this program. So currently the sunset on the historic property program is July 1st, 2002, and this extends it 8 years to 2010. And in section 8, this is kind of the counting procedures that the county assessors will need to be taking with the historic property program. And this is real similar to other special assessment programs that we've seen. And basically, it's going through and establishing what it will be the specially assessed value for these properties. And for the first 15 years, again, these properties have 15-year special assessments. In the first 15 years, the specially assessed value is set at the assessed value at the time of the application. And then it goes through it and describes the different accounting of the values on the roll, and taking into consideration Measure 50. But basically, this clarifies in the law in Section 8 as well as in another Section 15 that there will be a resetting of the specially assessed value in their second 15 years. And the second 15-year term is just for commercial properties. So residential properties just have 15-year terms, and that's it. They just have one period in which they're especially assessed and frozen. And then commercial properties will have a second 15-year, but this clarifies in Section 8 how that's supposed to be a resetting then of this specially assessed value. And then in Section 12A and B, this is something that was brought in on the House side, and it provides a waiver of the interest on the additional tax penalty on a historic property is disqualified under certain conditions. And then Section 15 goes through and clarifies again that this application period will be a 15-year application term, and then for commercial properties only, they can reapply. They become disqualified after the 15 years, and they reapply. And then their frozen value or their specially assessed value is reset again at the assessed value in that current year of the second term. So this is just trying to clarify, because under current law, it's very ambiguous still on what the courts have decided that counties are supposed to do. What the counties do is they do this resetting of the specially assessed value in the second 15-year term. So Section 15 is codifying in law what the county assessors already do. Section 27A is basically trying to clarify the effective date of this bill, and so it establishes the effective date as beginning tax year 2001-02, but it's also clarifying that properties that have reapplied for special assessment under old existing law, Section 33, Chapter 579 of Oregon Laws 1999, these properties that have reapplied, these commercial properties, are not subject to the changes in the bill. And then it also further clarifies that specially assessed values for historic properties that have already been established prior to July 1st of 2001, they shall not have any changes made to that specially assessed value just from the provisions of this bill. So those were just concerns that were raised on the House side as far as wanting some clarification about what particular properties were going to be affected from this bill. And then the last sections, 29 to 37, just go through the Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund. And this is just a fund that will provide loans to owners of historic property. Now, as far as the revenue impact, there's basically four components to the revenue impact, and the first one being the extending of the sunset date 8 years to 2010, then increasing the application fee from 1/5 to 1/3 of 1% of the real market value, also the granting a waiver of the interest charges for certain disqualified historic properties, and then again this resetting of the frozen value for commercial properties during their second 15-year special assessment. So looking at the resetting of the commercial property special assessment value as well as the increase of the application fee will have the effect of increasing taxes of $137,108 in 2002-03 and $618,576 in 2003-05 biennium. Then the reduction of the interest charges results in a reduction of local revenue of $414,000 in 2003-04, and this is just for 1 year because of the time when this one particular property owner was going to get the waiver of the interest charges. And basically with the extension of the sunset date to 2010, we would see, again, if this program was eliminated, this would be value that would be added back on the rolls. So due to that, and it's estimated that the additional taxes that which would have been collected by local districts is estimated at $7.2 million in 2002-03 and $15 million in 2003-05.
Questions on the orientation? Seeing none. I noticed there's several people who signed up to testify in favor of this bill with the amendments. Is there anyone here present who signed up to testify against this bill, or has anyone not had an opportunity to sign up on the written sheets? Ah, I have a hand up in the audience. Representative Butler, would you please come forward, and I will open the public hearing on House Bill 2270.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom Butler from House District 60. I'm having handed out, I think I understand better since Elizabeth has presented her very in-depth presentation. I understand a little better what the overall structure of the special exemption for historic property is, and I have a modest offering in dash A18 amendments, proposed amendments to the engrossed House Bill 2270. And basically what it does is it allows the continuation of those historic properties for other than commercial, that is residential properties, to be allowed some of the same characteristics. And what this bill does on page 6, it deletes a couple of the lines on page 6 in reference to the classification of property, and then on page 10 is where the major changes are, and that is it deletes the word on page 10, line 32, commercial, the owner of the property classified as historic property, and then on lines 38 and 43, where it starts off reapplicant. On those two lines, that would be for the commercial property reapplicant. And it's my understanding, according to legislative counsel, would allow for those properties which are presently classified as historic properties to be included, which are residential properties as opposed to commercial properties, to continue on with their historic designation. With that, I think that this I can tell you straight out that this comes from another House Bill, 3201, which we presented late on to try and make certain that the benefits were extended to those properties which were historic residential properties, primarily and exclusively residential properties. This does not affect those properties which are fourth floor residential and first three floors commercial. It's those that are residential properties, first and foremost.
Questions for Representative Butler? Representative Butler, I see that there is a revenue impact on the existing bill as it was promulgated by the House as amended, the engrossed version. Your amendments would add a different class of people or properties, I believe. And I was wondering if you had the chance to talk to anybody about the potential revenue impact on the 0103 biennium particularly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not asked for the fiscal impacts from the Legislative Fiscal Office, Legislative Revenue Office, relative to the revenues. This is an existing program for residential structures, so it would be one that would be retrievable, I think, readily by the Legislative Revenue Office.
I believe you're right, but I guess I was looking at the $38,000 impact in 0103, and changing or adding a group of folks to that might bring it over $50,000.
Very well may. And I don't know that I have a statement of strictly the fiscal impact. I don't, Mr. Chair, on the 3201, which was exclusively the residential property. But again, I think that is an item which could be retrieved on behalf of House Bill 2270 as they engrossed with the dash A18 amendment.
So HB 2270 might give us a good idea of where that fiscal would put us.
Yes, it was 3201, and it was introduced late enough that it was not heard in committee.
3201, I sit corrected. Thank you, Representative Butler. Questions for Representative Butler? Senator Beyer.
Representative, say again what the intended purpose of the amendment is to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer. The bill now is oriented towards commercial property primarily. It can, as my understanding, you could have commercial property with a residence in connection with it, where perhaps one floor of a building had been converted up above as a residence. This addresses those historic residences which are presently historic residences and would allow the benefit to be extended to the historic, the preservation of historic residences as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator George.
Representative Butler, two questions. Number one, what we're doing with the amendments and what we're trying to do in 3201 was to extend the current residential tax breaks for historic property. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's correct. It was to extend the existing benefits on those presently already qualifying preservation of historic residences. That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I could, just for a complimentary question. I've watched the effect of this program in preserving buildings that were scheduled to be demolished that are of significant historic value. And in fact, one of them is very near my farm, and it would have been an absolute tragedy if that home had been lost. And I think there's any way we can make this work to get this in here. That would be a great thing for Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I want to emphasize that there's not a large number of these residences in my district. The majority of these residences probably vest right here in the Willamette Valley. They are in specifically this brings the issue of the Fairmont Hill and other areas of Portland. Those historic turn of the century homes, which were built by the founders of the state and certainly the pioneers here in Salem.
Mr. Chairman, are you familiar with, throughout the South, I understand that they've just done a magnificent job of protecting those old southern mansions and any of their other historic assets. And what is amazing now is that that's become a major part of their tourism attraction, is that, you know, you can come and visit these. And, of course, you know, you'll notice wherever we have this designation, it appears that there's a sign indicating what this structure is and this historic significance.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's one of the benefits that are afforded under the program. These homes are available for tour, and it brings people specifically on the tour dates, and the tour dates are scattered throughout the year, so that it brings a calendaring in the historic areas, in the older portions here of the state, in the Willamette Valley particularly, so that folks can enjoy an opportunity to come and see portions of these homes which have been maintained in their original household settings. They're not converted into doctor's offices, they're not converted into the other kinds of things. They continue as primary dwelling family residences.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Church. Further questions?
Thank you,
Representative Butler. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
A number of folks have signed up to testify. Let's call forward Mr. James Hamrick. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Senator Farrielli, members of the committee. James Hamrick. I manage the State Historic Preservation Office, which is in the Parks and Recreation Department. Senator, I might actually be able to answer some of your questions to Representative Butler, if you would like.
Please do.
Either now or later.
Thank you.
The special assessment program. Once the first 15-year period ended, we've been getting as many properties going off the special assessment as we have going on the special assessment. That totals around 50 properties per year. Those properties are generally split two-thirds residential, one-third commercial. So if there was an opportunity for residential property to reapply, it's been our experience that not every property does reapply. So I think that you might be talking about anywhere from 15 to 30 properties, depending on. I think it would, given that most of these properties have a relatively low real market value, I suspect that the revenue impact would not be that great, but we can probably provide those statistics to you.
Thank you. Question?
Mr. Hamrick, one of the concerns that I have, and the concern, as you know, for Senator Yee and I has been, you know, like the covered bridges, and we're seeing those gradually disappear. Do you think that we're up to the plate strong enough here as far as enough incentive for folks to maintain and improve and preserve these historic sites?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, that's an excellent question. I'll just sort of preface an answer by telling you that during the interim, there was a working group, the Tax Incentives Working Group, that was called together by the governor's office and by the department to look at this whole issue, the larger issue of incentives. There is a report at your desks essentially here, which has some statistical information inside it that demonstrates that due to the cumulative impact of measures 5, 47, and 50, there's really been a sort of dramatic impact on the number of residential applications that we have for special assessment, generally because most folks feel that the administrative demands are more than the benefit basically is providing to them. You'll note though in that that most that we have actually held steady on the commercial properties, and so as a result of that, when the Tax Incentives Working Group, which basically represented both supporters and opponents of the program, we talked about two other things. One is in the bill, the revolving loan fund. It was essentially designed to help these folks, particularly in rural communities that really don't have a whole lot of movement in the tax base, and so that we could actually give them some sort of incentives, say to do facade rehabilitations or put a roof on or whatever. We did not ask for any money for that fund so that we could get the bill passed without getting it but we plan on looking very hard for money for that program. There was also a third piece of the working group also proposed a tax credit, which is the most popular and form of tax incentives for historic properties now in the United States. There's currently about 15 states that have been enacting these. And I think, Senator George, that would is, I think in the department's view, would have been the best thing to deal with the residential property issue, because it essentially, it essentially you get in and you get out, you spend some money and you get a little tax credit. The governor's office, although supportive of the concept, in the fall when the bill was being pushed through, they were concerned about some of the ballot measures, and so, they asked us to take it out, and we did. So, in answer to your question, special assessment is basically best for commercial properties these days. It's not that good for residential properties, and we will have the revolving loan fund program if you all approve the bill, and we will probably come back next session with the tax credit.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, based on what you just said, are the Dash 18 amendments consistent with what the work group had come to consensus on and had agreed upon in this bill?
Ms. Chair, Senator Castillo, I actually haven't seen the Dash 18s. If somebody could just give me a copy of it. I had, we were familiar with House Bill 3201, and I believe it had two provisions originally, one to delete the sunset and then two to delete to allow the residential. When the group met, the Tax Incentives Working Group met, this was an issue that was quite controversial, whether or not, because it is actually something that we get requested. Citizens would like to have, for residential property, would like to have a second 15-year period as well. In discussions with League of Oregon Cities and City of Portland and most of the people that have to deal with the revenue issues, they expressed in this working group that they would not be supportive of this because of the revenue impact, and so it never really got very far in that committee.
Thank you.
Further questions? So there's at this point there's no position on the Dash amendments, the Dash A18 amendments from the Historical Preservation Society.
Ms. Chair, I suspect that I know that someone's here from the League of Oregon Cities and the Association or the City of Portland. They may have something to say about that. I think there would be a question I would have as to whether or not there would be a roll-up if there was a second 15-year period for residential, that there be a roll-up of value like there is with the commercial properties. That would probably be the department's concern. And I had, Ms. Chairman, I had some testimony, but it's before you. I don't necessarily feel like I need to go through all of that unless you would like to hear it.
It is, in fact, part of the public record, and we appreciate, Mr. Hamrick, that you've expressed your support for the program. I think the value is clear. Questions? Further questions for Mr. Hamrick? Seeing none, thank you very much. I'd like to bring forward Vicki Duger. I hope I've gotten that pronounced correctly. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Vicki Duger. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Downtown Development Association. And my organization is a statewide nonprofit, and our mission is to assist communities with revitalizing their downtowns and community centers. And so I'm here, obviously, today in support of this bill because the historic fabric and architecture of so many of these downtowns are what people, gives these communities their sense of place, who they are, their landmarks, their what you think about growing up as a child, you know, you think hometown. And so that's one reason this bill is so important, is to help preserve, redevelop, reuse these structures that many of them are still languishing and we're still losing them. And so it's nice to see not only the assessment piece, but the revolving loan piece authorization for that. So it's really, really important to my clients, which are the communities throughout the state. It's just another tool in the toolbox. It really ties in well to the Oregon Livability Initiative, in that it's, once you really concentrate on revitalizing these city centers, it's about bringing new synergy there, helping reduce sprawl, sprawling conditions and sprawling development, and really concentrating on the traditional downtown core. And it ties in with other wonderful incentive tools that are out there, the Community Incentive Fund and other programs. So it's just another tool, a very, very important tool and a very niche specific tool in this toolbox for downtowns. I would like to add, in addition, Representative Butler talked about the open house and how important that program is for people to come by and visit these structures. But also, many communities put together wonderful little walking tours where, you know, from the sidewalk, they really get to see the whole stack of buildings, historic, commercial, and residential. And they put together driving tours. And I know out in the Willamette now, they're doing barn tours, which is really bringing a lot of interest out to that part of the country in a new area that people haven't really thought about much. So it's really, communities are using their historic resources in very interesting ways to help bring sources of revenue in that they didn't do before, and I think that's another piece in helping diversify some of these economies that are really struggling.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Decker? Thank you. Seeing none. I'd like to call Bill Linden, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Historic Properties Association. I wanted to talk briefly this morning about an amendment to this bill that we're going to be bringing forward very shortly. Under the chairman's direction, there was a work group formed of interested parties in the historic property area. We met yesterday, and in terms of an interest that our association has, we came very close to closure on some amendments that we think will hopefully be acceptable to the committee. We have a narrow area of interest at this point that deals with new construction on historic properties that are already in the program. So these would be properties that have qualified and been accepted, and the owner has a desire to add some new construction to that property. The amendment will set in place a requirement that the addition be approved by the State Historic Preservation Office, that the Historic Preservation Officer have authority to promulgate rules as to how these applications will be considered. And it would only apply prospectively. There would be no retroactive application. In the 99 session, a similar amendment was passed by both houses, but it was retroactive in its impact, and that was the reason that the governor vetoed that particular piece of legislation, for the primary reason. This is purely prospective. We don't know how many properties it might impact going forward, but it's one additional feature that you could bring into a historic property that might make it more both economically feasible for an owner to maintain a historic property. And again, it would have to go through the regular rigorous approval process. So at the work group discussions yesterday, we talked at some length about this. I think that, and I know that the other parties will express their view on it, I think it's fair to say that at this point, the objections to this concept have been largely addressed in the sense of making an amendment clearer about the prospective nature, so there's no question that doesn't go back in time, And again, I'm not sure that all the parties are going to be in a position of support, but I don't think any of the parties hopefully will be in a position of opposition. So we expect to have this language for you within the next day or so. So hopefully at the next work session or hearing on this bill, we can present it in LC form.
Mr. Linden, have you looked also at the A18 amendments that were presented this morning by Representative Butler?
Mr. Chairman, I did pick up a copy of those just now. I'm not really in a position to say we would take a position on this matter, but I certainly can talk with the principals in the association and see if they wish to wait.
Please, I'd certainly be interested to know how they connect or disconnect with the work of the group that you've discussed this morning. Close to closure is, I think, how you characterize that. Yeah. You can say that of two automobiles that have both crossed the yellow line. Okay. They're close to closure. Is that kind of closure we're going to get out of this work group, Mr. Linden? Or is
there... Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so on this particular issue. I think we're going to come up with words that make people comfortable in terms of the prospective impact of this amendment. And again, with the safeguards that the amendment will have in terms of you have to go through an application process, you have to have approval, you have to do it according to whatever rules are developed. It's probably the type of thing that will happen very infrequently, but again, it ought to be an option for historic property owners to enhance the economic viability of their buildings.
Mr. Vice Chair, and then Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, will the local governments and even the cities, will they have the opportunity to approve this or not? And when we start adding new things to old buildings, I think it sort of gets at the heart of communities just like programs.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, the process is essentially through the State Historic Preservation Office. I believe that in the rulemaking that would accompany this amendment, there are all kinds of parties, including local government, are going to have some input into what those rules will say. But the actual application and approval would be through the SHPO office.
Would there be an opportunity in there for a local community or SHPO to say no based on local opposition?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I'll defer to Mr. Hamrick, but my understanding is there's an opportunity for local government to have input into that approval process. I don't believe the recommendations are considered to be binding on SHPO, but they certainly have an opportunity to make their views known.
Further questions, Senator George?
Looking at the historic preservation booklet that we were handed out, I recognize a lot of these buildings, and I have a couple of them in my district that I've watched them go through a process to make an exemption, particularly on one residence. And what they did, of course, was they made that consistent with the architecture of the original structure. So if you didn't know what it looked like before, you would not have noticed that there was any difference in the building. That's the kind of thing apparently that you're talking about, is where we may have a historic building, but we need an addition that would maybe fit some of the modern technology type things. But then what you're, I think we're suggesting is that would be, any new addition would be consistent with the architecture of the original historic building.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, you're absolutely correct. I'm sure that in the application process, preserving the original character of the structure is a very important part of the criteria. The other instance in which this amendment could apply would be to the addition of a structure to the top of to the roof of a building. There are already some in the Portland area that have done this, and there are a separate set of guidelines that apply to that. For example, I think there are some fairly stringent requirements about how visible something on top of a historic property can be. So I think in both instances, in terms of the more straight residential type example you provided, as well as the new construction on top of historic properties in some of the urban areas, they're pretty clear requirements that are going to have to be met to preserve the original character of the structure.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Linden, are there further questions for Mr. Linden? Anything then? Mr. Linden, after the after the hearing, or the public hearing today, there's an opportunity Thursday and then Tuesday for hearing this bill. Bills after Tuesday will be heard in this committee only by the express direction of the president and the co-chairs. So I would urge you to, if we're going to hold this bill as you appear to be asking us to do, I would urge that you come to closure, or closer to closure, immediately, and then notify the chair so that we can, if there are further amendments, we have an opportunity to consider those along with the A18s that have been presented and requested. So,
Mr. Chairman, I expect
Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, just recognizing the short timeline, just so that at least for me, I'm real clear. I think this is a great program in general for rebuilding downtowns and historic residential properties. I get a little uncomfortable when we start adding to historic buildings, and whether I understand how that makes commercial sense sometimes. I've been involved in putting some of those deals together, but I'm not sure the policy of doing that. For me to feel comfortable with any amendment that you might bring forward that's adding to the size of a structure, it would be important for me to see that the local governments that are sort of participating in those rebuildings have the right to approve that, whether that's through a comment period that allows SHPO to say no based on an objection from a local government or an outright veto, I'll use that word. That's important to me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, we'll certainly pursue that issue with the local government reps that are on this work group and get you additional information, you and your colleagues additional information. But Senator, on your other, Mr. Chairman, on your other point, Thursday, I believe, we'll have this at closure and an amendment to present to this committee.
I have a vision of twisted metal. But the point is, I think all the committee members feel this is an excellent program that needs to be carried forward. There is a discussion about how to add value to these structures. And adding value can be the difference between the historic preservation of a building and the loss of the building. So the curves have to cross, and obviously the local government is the one that, in fact, pays the cost of the opportunity cost of foregone tax revenue. And there's got to be something of clear benefit that comes back to the local community. I don't think anybody could go through the rehabilitated neighborhoods in Portland without seeing that value at work. It's clear, mm-hmm. clearly there. The question is, all classes, all times, 15 or 30, get some direction to the committee, please, Mr. Linden, and come to closure, that would be good. And the fewer sparks, the better. did you have a question or comment? Mr. Burns, would you come forward, please?
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Justin Burns, appearing today on behalf of our client, the Irving Street Lofts. We, too, are a member of the work group that met yesterday. I don't know that we have such closure, and we might be, in fact, this twisted metal, based on objections by the City of Portland to our proposed amendments, which will be done at the same time Mr. Linden's amendments are finished. Our proposed amendments are also simple and of very limited effect. They contemplate somewhat of the same situation proposed by Representative Beyer, or by Representative Butler.
Thank you.
What that does is allows properties which were originally commercial when they applied to the program to reapply to the program, notwithstanding the fact that they're no longer commercial. These are properties six in number, according to Mr. Hambrick, which were apartments during their first 15-year period that were since converted to condos. Under that situation, they're not allowed to reapply. These properties are largely in Northwest Portland and have benefited greatly by the program. Several of these buildings were warehouses, which were converted into valuable residential properties. To the extent these properties are important in their renovation, continues to be important, we think it makes sense to allow them to reapply. We are also proposing as part of this program to allow them to carry over their basis from the first 15-year period to the second. The reason for so doing is not to be greedy, as some might say, but that is largely practical. Without carrying over the basis from the first 15-year period, there is no real benefit that these buildings appreciate. No building, in our opinion, would enter into the program without the carried over basis, because they would legally obligate themselves to a historic renovation plan. But without the frozen basis, they would really appreciate no financial gain greater than that that is granted to them under Measure 50, the 3% cap. So if these properties are valuable, if their continued reinvestment is valuable, they should be allowed to reapply and appreciate that tax investment. I think it's somewhat short-sighted of the city to complain about their lost tax revenues, because they will realize when these properties finally come off the roll significantly greater tax revenues because of the significantly higher assessed values of these properties. Certainly, in the case of our client, this building was a warehouse. Had it not had this program, but for this program, it would still be producing minimal tax revenues. We think if this building is allowed to reapply, allowed to carry over its basis, it will continue its steep increase in value, which the cities will eventually realize. Finally, the city will say that these properties advertise the low taxes which the homeowners pay. And that is true, but it is not a net benefit, or it may be a net benefit. It is not as great a net benefit as is apparent, because these homeowners which pay lower tax assessments pay higher homeowners association dues to fund the historic renovation of the buildings. So just looking at the tax side of what these homeowners and these converted condos pay is not the whole picture. You have to understand that they pay significantly higher homeowners due than their brethren without historic properties because they're not renovating their buildings.
Senator Barnett?
You've got me lost in the rhetoric. Tell me what you're doing and why this is necessary.
What we're doing is allowing six properties in the state which applied to Chair Senator Beyer.
So we're talking former warehouses?
At least in our case, yes. They were warehouses converted to apartments. They applied to the program.
These were like warehouses in the Pearl District that were created and turned into lofts?
Well, they were turned into apartments and applied in the first 15-year period as commercial properties, because apartments are commercial properties. They're owned by one person.
Okay, so then were the exteriors, the historic features, restored?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you want to take what were apartments and convert them into an owner-occupied condos?
They already have been, and part of the amendment, Chair and Senator Beyer, allows the Homeowners Association to reapply into the program. The exteriors of buildings and the common areas of buildings are owned in common by the homeowner. So it's largely the same concept. It just allows the homeowners association to replace the owner of what would have been the apartment building.
So are you just continuing? The intent is to continue a tax credit or to gain an additional one?
To continue the tax credit from the first 15-year period.
So is the issue there that you're trying to continue it because of change of ownership that would have disqualified it?
Yes. That's correct.
And not extend it, or just maintain the original 15 years?
We want to extend it an additional 15 years.
And what historic benefit would the community get out of that? And what are you going to do in the additional 15 years?
Well, the program, Chair and Senator Beyer, doesn't change. A property reapplying as a condo will still be required to submit a preservation plan, and it will still require the approval of the state historic preservation officer. So they will have to undertake the same kinds of historic renovations as any property which is allowed to reapply, any commercial property which is allowed to reapply.
I'm trying to conceive what additional historic renovation you're going to do if it's already been done.
Well, commercial properties, Chair Senator Beyer, are allowed to reapply, and there are many things in the case of commercial properties. They are allowed to, they are required to provide significant reinvestment or significant investment in ADA seismic and energy improvements in the buildings. That's something we'd consider, and that's something that could be required of these properties as well.
I'm still trying to figure out what the additional historic renovation is going to be done through the extension of the credit, but okay.
Further questions for Mr. Byrne? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Senator Byers tends to try to get the, you know, the balance point here on this thing, if in fact it was still just an old warehouse, maybe even an abandoned warehouse, it would have obviously a very low tax rate. And so someone comes in, and whether it's a department or whether it's, you know, owner association condos, improvements are made, the preservation occurs. What's the net loss to the city versus it still being an old, abandoned, or deteriorating warehouse?
Chair, Senator, Senator George, there is no net loss, and that's her point. It is only revenues foregone. The city complains that by allowing the basis to carry over, they're losing those tax revenues for additional 15 years. Yes, that is true. I guess my rejoinder is 15 years is an arbitrary number set as a policy decision by this legislature. To the extent that this program and the benefits which has inured to these buildings remains important, the legislature has within its province the authority to extend out that line arbitrarily for another 15 years. We're here saying that this program has worked. It's worked incredibly well, and it should be allowed to continue. We don't think that without the extending the tax benefits and the reapplication that these buildings will reapply because there will be no benefit to them.
Further questions? I would urge you to connect or stay connected to the working group and bring forward whatever cooperative work that you can. And I guess what we're looking at is the dash A18s and possibly two other sets of amendments.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Alfred Stolle, Historic Preservation League of Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Braille and members of the committee. I'm Alfred Staley, architect and secretary of the Historic Preservation League of Oregon, and I'm basically here to say that the Historic Preservation League of Oregon supports the bill 2270, and I had just a brief chance to review the amendments, and I see nothing in those that would cause us to change those remarks. Basically, why the program, I think, has been a very effective planning tool for communities as well as economic stimulus for those cities where, in place communities where historic preservation has gone on. The program is a great leveraging tool because the amount of taxes that are foregone for the buildings are considerably less than the actual cost of restoration and rehabilitation of these buildings, whether commercial or residential. So that is a boon from the program. The program, I think, has become a major tool, one of the major tools in Oregon's planning program of communities throughout the state for the keeping a sense of place in communities as a planning tool to help us maintain the quality of life that we like in Oregon. And I also support the revolving loan fund. Just as kind of an aside on the I don't think we have a position pro or con on the extension of the bill to additions on buildings, but as an architect who specializes in historic preservation and is the preservation consultant on the restoration of Lewis and Clark High School in Spokane, that school would not be continuing as a high school, as a major central city downtown high school in Spokane, if it wasn't for the fact that they were going to put an addition on the building. They actually had to demolish an earlier addition and reconstruct a new addition on the building. But in many cases, and I'm talking about institutional and public buildings of many kinds, and I don't deal with commercial buildings particularly, but certainly in those cases, why the addition to a building is quite often necessary just for the building to be maintained in use at all. And being maintained in use as a high school or as a home or as an office building or whatever, why it is usually the primary function of any historic building, and secondary uses are quite often less desirable options in the building. So that's just a consideration.
Questions? Yes, sir. Senator George?
Just brought back a haunting memory of my old hometown, and when you turned off of the highway and headed down Main Street, at the end of that Main Street was a magnificent multi-story high school building. And when that was destroyed, it was not preserved. They made a decision it was cheaper to go in and build a brand new, steel building, that type of a structure. That town has never been the same. That has been almost 40 years ago, maybe 45 years ago. People in that town, particularly the old-timers, still talk about how big of a mistake that was to allow that structure to go away. And what was terrible about it, today we would look at that and say, oh my goodness, it's very preservable. Very, very well-built structure, as they used to build things many years ago. And my thought has always been, we cannot allow that to happen, because just the psychological impact on the community, the community changed. It was never the same. That sounds rather bizarre to talk about an old multi-story high school building, but yet it really had that impact on that community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Jordan. Any further questions for Mr. Staley? I think we're all familiar with situations identical to the one that you mentioned. I think now the only question is the seismic issue and some of the ADA issues that we have for Americans with Disability Act and so on. Yeah, so I think people are, in fact, recognizing the value of the architectural heritage. Mm-hmm. Mr. Staley, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Further questions? Any other persons here present that wish to offer testimony on the board? Senator Beyer.
May I ask a question, Mr. Hammer?
You may. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hammer, could you come forward?
Thank you. James, I just wanted to be sure, as we make changes in this, we have done nothing in the bill that would change the right of a property owner not to participate in historic designation of their property?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, that is correct. You know, the special assessment program was and still is voluntary. There's no requirement. And Ms. Chair, if I might, Senator Beyer, you mentioned the local communities, in addition to having to deal with local land use laws as it relates to additions, it is our policy, even though it's not a formal one, but we have relatively close working relations with local governments relating to these rehabilitations, and that even though we don't necessarily always agree on the details, we do, in fact, keep a pretty close working relationship about these things. So I think that we wouldn't be doing it without them knowing it, and vice versa.
Follow-up, Senator Beyer.
I feel real strongly that there are two principal parties in this. You know, we're doing enabling work here, but the principal parties are the property owner, who have a pretty strong right to do what they want to do with their properties, and I feel strongly that if the community deems that it ought to go beyond that, then there's a thing called cash that they ought to participate in. The other side of that is that I think building and retaining communities is a community issue, and I would hate to see us get too far in terms of the legislature or state agency on our behalf trying to second guess what a local government wants to do.
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't agree more, and however we can assure you that we'll have that local government assurance, I might add that in the working group of which I was a part, certainly relating to the Dash 3s, that the city, both the city and the League of Oregon Cities expressed support for that amendment as sort of altered in the way that we are going to see it probably on Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The chair has an admonition. I actually checked with the governor's staff on the status of this bill and the history of the bill and the attitude toward potential amendments. And And essentially, the feedback was, to be frank, we might be looking at veto with the amendments. And I thought, this sounds like outtakes from The Sopranos. I want this the value of this bill to move forward out of this legislative session, because clearly there's an interest in historic preservation incentive. Right. And the key is incentive. The issue for some has been that the people that seem to be benefiting from the incentive tend to be corporations and wealthy folks.
Mr. Chair?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
I'll come back to some of those. But the idea is that poor folks don't have the capital to renovate these historic structures. And so the folks that will benefit will tend to be in the upper income classes, or they will have, in fact, access to capital. And the issue seems to be the length of time, the quality or the class of properties that can apply, and the cost of local government. And so far we've tap-danced around the cost of local government. So you haven't really had anybody come up and say, look, this is the bottom line. I see hands going up in the background. But we already invited testimony from folks. Clearly we're going to have this bill back again, but not very many times. we're running out of calendar here. So I guess what I would say is there's a lot of wonderful stuff in this bill. It would be a tragedy to lose. I would urge the working group, somebody's going to have to move together on this bill to get it through this process, because if we act on the amendments, as I think we probably will act on some of them, this is a House bill, and it has to go back through another process of conferencing. So if you, if we don't come to some closure quickly on this bill and move forward with the best parts of it, then, in fact, we will not have done the best job we can do for citizens. Senator George has the floor, and then I see the hands are up in the back. Yeah. We never seem to mind spending local revenues. If you Senator George.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's very similar to what you were saying there a minute ago, and that was a good friend of mine who is a very, very strong environmentalist. Has talked to me about a book called Environmental Capitalism, and he points out that the only people capable of actually going out and doing something about environmental pollution are people who have the resources, those capitalists that are well enough off to go out and actually do it. His point in the book, apparently, is that, in fact, that does occur, that if the proper incentives are there, those people have the muscle to get the job done. I think it's the same thing in historic preservation. We've seen some of the preservation that we, the state, have undertaken. Now, talk about cost to society. I mean, you don't need to build the Taj Mahal to get this thing done. Point being, then, is that these incentives, I hope the governor's office will take a long look at it, these incentives are going to make the difference between it either being preserved or eventually it being destroyed. And I hope we can get a balance back in there.
Actually, Senator George, I think you've got some really good arguments on that. But I think if folks are looking at Portland as a laboratory for preservation, the whole block where the Blitz Brewery was located now is a rubble pile. And, of course, there will be added value that comes behind that process, but it won't be in the same character. And there are some absolute gems of architectural history there that need to be preserved. And the whole question for me is, we're trying to get an incentive for the preservation, but there has to be a component of added value. And we're trying to incent both the preservation and the addition of value. And obviously somebody's going to have to pay if we're providing an incentive. And we don't seem to be very forthcoming as the legislature making an appropriation for this process, so it's the local government that shoulders the burden. But then again, it's the local government that benefits from the increased interest in neighborhoods that are revitalizing. Now we'll deal with the hands that have shot up in the fourth row. Fourth row people, please come forward. Looks like two-part harmony to me.
Yeah.
For the record.
I'm the base today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Dyster with the League of Oregon Cities. I first just want to go on the record as saying that the League of Oregon Cities has historically been very supportive of the Historic Preservation Program, and we continue to be. We think it's very important because this program helps preserve buildings that are really important to local character and city livability. That being said, however, we're at a point in terms of our local revenue situations where we're really having difficulty meeting our existing needs, and funding additional enhancements to this program through foregone revenue puts us in a very difficult position. So
I did meet in the work group yesterday, and I'm happy to sit down with folks again. I would like to go on the record as saying, based upon the discussions that we've had and the conceptual conversations that we've had and the amendments that I have seen today, we would not be supportive of a second 15-year special assessment for residential property, mostly because we feel that residential properties don't have to meet the same seismic, energy, and ADA requirements that commercial properties have to meet, and that the historic renovation and preservation will have been completed. Therefore, the program has served its purpose, and we feel that it's time to get those properties back on the rolls. So, take it away, Marge.
Senator Castillo.
I was wondering, were any of these amendments offered on the House side when the bill was on the House side? And if so, what was the reception there?
We don't really care. It's not of concern to us.
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, several of these amendments were offered and withdrawn.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Castillo. Ma'am?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Marge Kafori, and I represent the City of Portland. We, too, are very supportive of the historic property assessment program we have since its inception in about 1975. The filter that we use in the city to look at whether amendments to this program are appropriate or not is whether amendments maintain the integrity of the program itself. The program was designed to preserve, rehabilitate historic structures. To the extent that the program is accomplishing those things, we support it, and therefore we can find ourselves at least in agreement with the Dash 3 amendments that were talked about by Mr. Linden earlier today. We do have a process where we are part of the review, perhaps not to the extent that you would like to see, Mr. Senator Byron. We can take a look at that again. I think it's probably a good suggestion. In the approval process of new construction additions to historic buildings, but we can see in the abstract, the rationale for making the argument that that kind of addition will help a building pencil out, and to that extent, we can go along with that. On the other hand, the Dash 5 amendments, which were described to you by Mr. Burns, are something that we can't support. The reason is because if you take a look at the buildings that he is talking about, these are structures that have been preserved and have been rehabilitated as they were converted into condominium housing. There's no further work for those buildings to undergo. All that his amendment does is to allow for an additional 15-year tax break with no received benefit by the city for additional investments in those structures because the investments have already been made. They had to have been made in order for them to become condominium housing. So we oppose those amendments, and we will continue to oppose those amendments. I think those two cars are going to crash, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that they're going to be able to pass each other.
Twisted metal, indeed.
As far as returning value to the city or to any city is concerned, we look at these programs in essence as not unlike urban renewal. You make a plan, the public makes an investment in the plan, and at some point we expect that those investments and the value of those investments will be returned to the property tax roll. In this particular instance, we think it's important to have a 15-year, and then a roll-up in value and an additional 15-year period for commercial structures because it takes them longer and they have more challenges and more investments that are required. ADA, seismic, and energy are three of those investments that are required for commercial. That is not true of historic residences. Residences, whether single-family detached residences or vertical housing, are houses. And those investments in houses are usually made in 15 years or less. And then beyond that, there aren't, other than simple preservation, the kinds of investments that are really required to maintain those properties. So the original program was designed with 15 years in mind for both commercial and residential. The program was amended in 1995 to add an additional 15 years for commercial because of the advent of ADA, seismic, and energy requirements, which were new requirements at that point. So it was felt appropriate to give commercial structures the additional 15 years to meet those new requirements. Those new requirements do not inure residences, and for that reason, we think it's entirely appropriate for the residences to receive the 15-year benefit and then go off the roll.
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
We've dumped several billion dollars in the light rail in Portland,
And many people early had made the statement, wouldn't it be cheaper just to pay somebody a subsidy so those folks could live downtown rather than us having a multi-billion-dollar operation to commute them back and forth and costing us substantial subsidy for every rider? Do you guys put that into the equation when you're looking at this? In other words, it is an interest of the city of Portland to have those folks right there where they should be near their jobs.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, thank you for bringing that up. And as a matter of fact, the properties that Mr. Burns are referring to are in the Pearl District. It's one of the most successful, booming districts in the city, largely because of both light rail and because of the installation of a streetcar, which the city is just completing and will be opening in July. That is one of the highest density areas in the West. It is a booming area. People live there and commute to Intel, so it's a reverse commute now. We are trying to accomplish those goals. We appreciate the state's investment. We appreciate the federal government's investments. They have been very important in terms of making those kinds of areas work, and we expect that they will continue to do so.
Mr. Chair, the follow-up. We had a front-page headline about a month ago, an Oregonian saying core district of Portland had a decrease in population. You know, it looks to me like that isn't completely representative of the actual numbers that, you know, for some reason people are leaving there. My thought being, you know, do you need incentive to enable people to be able to stay there? You can run their costs up so high, they're going to flee that area. They're going to go across to Clark County because they can't afford to live in Portland any longer. And that's the kind of thing we're hearing from some of those folks. Do you think there's any relationship between, once those costs go up, once their taxes start to rise, they're going to make a decision of whether they want to maintain that condo or whether they'd like to move somewhere else. And if a core population drop is occurring, you better have some sort of incentive to get them to stay there.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, actually, the article was referring to a change in demographics itself, in that people who tend to stay in downtown, whether Portland or any place else, tend to be one couple households with no children or very few children. And so what you're really seeing is the drop in the size of the household itself, from maybe a 3 or 4 or 5 child household with two parents to maybe a one person household or a two person household. That is certainly true in the neighborhood I live in, which is the Inner East Side in Portland. And it's true of a number of other areas as well. But we're not unique, and it really has less to do with the cost of the housing in Portland as it does to just the change in the demographics of families themselves.
So you don't think the economics of affordable housing has made that demographic change?
Mr. Chair and Senator George, there certainly are those factors at play, and as you know, Oregon has a very high cost of housing all over the state, and it's an issue that we pay a lot of attention to. It's one of the reasons we're very concerned about the conversion of multifamily housing into condominiums in Portland, because we want to preserve an affordable housing stock in the city for people who cannot afford a higher cost of housing. It's extremely important. It's extremely important in all of the suburbs that surround the Portland area as well, where a lot of families are unable to find the cost of housing that they can afford to live in. So, you know, there are a number of strategies at play here. Keep families downtown, keep housing affordable, and yet keep the city growing and economically viable.
Thank you.
Senator Beyer?
You made a good point, I think, coupled with the Senator Ferrioli's comments on that. I think they're real. I would disagree a little bit. I think the people who can afford to do commercial projects are obviously those who are in the business of doing that. They do it on, frankly, a balance sheet basis, and it takes a little bit more. And I think it's that partnership that happens with the community, but what's important to that, I think, is that the community feels they are getting something back. And it's not the city. It's not the government. It's the community. And it's the judgment of those people who are elected there to make a decision whether it's in the value of the community or not to do that. So I think the issue for me is one of giving the elected officials of those communities the right to say yes or no. And sometimes they make mistakes, and I could show you one, my community that I represent, where they wiped out most of the downtown. I could also show you some historic projects that have been redone in Eugene that have been very good and would not have been possible at all without the help of the tax credit. Where I would differ with the chair is on the residential side, at least in Springfield, a project that I questioned a long time is a working neighborhood that's one of the few in the state that was done that way. It's not the big grand houses, it's the smaller bungalows, and a very wonderful project that's worked very well. It takes longer if you're not one of the people with a lot of means to cause that to happen, and I think that even in that case, a community may wish to have the right to work with SHPO and say, it makes sense in this instance to do that. Again, the test there is communities making that decision, not the legislature.
Colleagues, we've chewed this issue exceeding fine this morning. It's almost as if we have the luxury of time. I will remind our folks from the cities, Portland Metro and the League of Oregon Cities, that we have just also approved a measure that would allow vertical tax districts. We had a dark presentation of young urban professionals trapped in eking out their grim existence with laptops and Palm Pilots staggering from Starbucks to Starbucks and then suffering for their next caffeine high. And it seems to me that the issue that we're talking about here is very similar. The conversion of commercial to residential is a step toward incenting vertical housing and densification. You know, it's our policy to incent that sort of stuff for the communities. The time-honored axiom that those who benefit pay, I think, sums up the issue for local jurisdictions. This is essentially an issue that I would find, that most of my constituents would find incomprehensible. But I'm asking you to go ahead and continue to stick with this issue and come back with something that makes sense. But do look at the amendments in light of the a question about vertical taxing districts for housing. I think we've got the same equation, maybe in a different wrapping. Please try to, can't we all get along here? These are your constituents. I'd like to see something out of this bill that moves forward. Having said all that, we spent more than enough time hearing this bill, so we will close the public hearing. We will adjourn our meeting until next time.